from DogNation.com. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented by Marco's Pizza. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
What is wrong with UGA recruiting? It sort of started out as a very real, earnest, passionate question around the summer of 2017, and it was obviously answered emphatically with the end of the 2018 class, both in December and then stretching into February, that obviously nothing's wrong with Georgia recruiting. Georgia puts together the number one class in the country for 2018. But at the time the question was initially asked, it seemed real. Georgia was ranked, what, in the 60s and the 70s around this time a year ago, last summer. There was some sort of legitimate angst, I think, or at least it seemed legitimate at the time, angst among Georgia fans about what, you know, was going on with UGA recruiting, a far cry from where the 2017 class had finished. In the summer of 2017, heading towards the end of the 2018 cycle, there were some UGA fans that were legitimately worried. In some respects, this summer has almost been a carbon copy of that. Maybe kind of, at least when it comes to one position group. You know, we have talked a lot here on our program about the nature of defensive line recruiting. This is one of those things where it looks like Georgia's had some high-profile misses. It looks like Georgia has not gotten in on some kids that I think some Georgia fans think Georgia should be a part of here, and there has been some reason to worry about all of this. And frankly, if you don't mind me saying so, there's also been a bit of a spotlight, maybe extra attention paid to Georgia defensive line coach Trey Scott, obviously at the SEC level position coaches. While we appreciate their on-field expertise, the main job of a position coach many times is to really be an A-plus black belt recruiter. In some respects, Trey Scott has looked like a guy that's been close but no cigar a few times with some of the high-profile elite defensive lineman names here, and we'll obviously continue to sort of talk about his role in all of this. But there has been some concern this spring and summer about the nature of UGA defensive line recruiting. For his part, Jeff Sintel, our Dog Nation recruiting insider, when he's been with us here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza, he's tried to calm those fears. He's tried to calm those nerves. He's tried to keep the main thing, to borrow the phrase that Kirby Smart used a lot around the Rose Bowl back in January. He's tried to remind Georgia fans that, yes, there may be the occasional miss here and there or the occasional name that gets some chatter that ultimately chooses somewhere other than UGA, but there are a few really specific names that Georgia fans ought to have circled much more boldly than any other names here. And when it comes to the state of Georgia's recruiting efforts on the defensive line, there are a few names that just really matter more than the rest. In fact, let me go back to a month or so ago here on our program when Jeff Sintel spoke directly to the anxiety that some Georgia fans have about maybe a lackluster effort at recruiting defensive linemen over the past couple of cycles heading into the pivotal moments of the 2019 class. Here's Jeff Sintel.
Defensive line recruiting, everybody knows the names. I think they should maybe spam the panic buttons if things happen where guys like Trevon Walker, Derek Rambo, Hunter, guys like that start maybe leaning or start pointing towards another program. Another name to think about there is Quashawn Fuller. He's a guy that continues to say very nice things about Georgia. He took two recent visits to Georgia. He told me recently that although he is committed to Florida State, he still has Georgia among his top five schools, and all five schools there are basically neck and neck right now when it comes to his recruitment.
All right, close followers of the Dog Nation recruiting storylines here will notice that when Jeff Sintel brings up those three names, Trevon Walker, Derek Rambo Hunter, Quashawn Fuller, inquiring minds are probably already aware that Quashawn Fuller is currently a Florida State commitment. And when Jeff Sintel spoke those words, Derek Rambo Hunter, the strong side defensive end from down in South Florida, wasn't committed anywhere, but now he's at least publicly committed to Florida State here. Remains to be seen if that commitment stands for Derek Hunter, but that was an uncommitted prospect when Jeff spoke those words. Now, Hunter is currently committed to Florida State. So of the three names that Jeff said, hey, pay close attention to these defensive linemen. When you evaluate the state of Georgia's defensive line recruiting efforts, pay really close attention to these guys more so than anything else. Two of the three names that Jeff mentioned are currently committed to another school. Only one of those names is an uncommitted prospect for right now, which brings us back to Trevon Walker. And many of you are aware, you probably read the story at DogNation.com. Reports are out there, I guess first reported by Chad Simmons from Rivals, that Trevon Walker, the five-star defensive tackle, is set to make his college announcement on Tuesday. And for those of you that listen to our program every single day, I don't have to tell you what you already know. This is as big as it gets for Georgia. It is the position of need here when you look at what Georgia's about to lose in terms of depth in the future years along the defensive line. It is a elite top-flight player in the state of Georgia here. Everything you want to describe about the nature of this decision, the one that Trayvon Walker is going to make tomorrow night, is just gigantic. I believe, and I know at times I'm sort of guilty of hyperbole here, but I believe that this is the single most important recruiting decision that will be made by anybody as a part of the 2019 class. With all due respect to guys who've already made those decisions like Jaden Hazelwood and Nolan Smith, I know how important they are. Guys that could make their decision, a guy like Derek Booth, or may or may not even still be in the mix here for Georgia. There are a lot of names of a lot of top-flight players when it comes to Georgia's 2019 recruiting efforts. I don't believe that any of them is more significant potentially than what Trayvon Walker brings to the table. And as proof of my point here, ahead of his decision on Tuesday, let's go back and look at some of the things that Trayvon Walker said to Dog Nation before. First of all, when it comes to his recruitment by Georgia, the guy that has apparently led the way in a lot of this has been the head dog himself, Kirby Smart. Here's how Trayvon Walker recently explained that to Jeff Centel.
Trayvon, which head coach plays the biggest role in your recruiting right now?
Right now, that stays in contact, Coach Smart.
Really?
Yeah, Coach Smart. He's just like, most of the time when he was on the road, he made sure he get stopped to see me. And he gets on the phone with me just about every week. You know, some head coach you really can't get that from. But he finds time to make for me, so.
So now imagine how busy Kirby Smart is. Imagine how many recruiting priorities he has to try to manage at once. Obviously, it's almost unfathomable the workload that Kirby takes on in any given day. But here's a guy, top defensive lineman in the state of Georgia, one of the best in the entire country, and Trayvon Walker is going to say, hey, you know what? I feel like I've gotten personal attention from Kirby Smart that I'm not getting from other head coaches. Visits, stopping by to see him at school or whatever, contact, text messages, things like that. This is a guy in Trayvon Walker who says, I feel very satisfied with the personal attention I've gotten from the head coach of Georgia. And it goes without saying, you don't get that kind of attention from any SEC coach unless you are just a gigantic monumental prospect. That's exactly what I believe that Trayvon Walker is, and he's going to make his college decision on Tuesday. It goes without saying that Dog Nation is going to be all over that. But it's obviously not just Georgia who's trying to put a big foot forward when it comes to the recruitment of Trayvon Walker. You may remember on our show a few weeks ago, we talked about other schools pulling out all the stops, including Auburn, apparently, as reported by Keith Niebuhr from 24/7 Sports, were offering him as not just a chance to be a game-changing defensive lineman in football, but for a guy that's a multi-sport star there at Upson Lee, a chance to also be a basketball player as well. He's certainly a state champion in that regard. Is he an SEC-level basketball player, or was this just a ploy to curry favor in a way that other schools might not do? I asked Jeff Centel about that as well, and recently Jeff sort of sounded off on the notion that another school might recruit Trayvon Walker as a two-sport star. Here's Jeff again.
Well, I would say this is simply a mid-June storyline, which I think takes place because I think Trayvon Walker was on campus at Auburn over the last week with his basketball camp. The Upson Lee basketball team is a tremendous program in the state of Georgia. I think they haven't lost a game in two seasons. The premise of your point is valid. I can see why there's an irritation there. The only thing that Trayvon Walker would do during the winter of his college career by playing basketball is shed a lot of weight, and that's the weight he needs to get ready to take care of the rigors of the SEC in the trenches and also if he preps for a potential pro career. I just think it's a mid-June storyline. It's a convenient storyline with a five-star prospect.
Yeah, I think Jeff's right about that. I don't think that Trayvon Walker's a serious threat to even listen in on the notion of, hey, come here and be a two-sport star at Auburn. I sort of file that. It's kind of an unserious recruiting pitch by Gus Malzahn and Bruce Pearl, but it does sort of speak to the athleticism that Walker brings to the table. That would even be a consideration. We showed you some video back during the winter of Walker playing basketball, and it's kind of amazing to think that a defensive lineman at the SEC level can move his feet as well as Walker does on a basketball floor and get up and jump the way that he does. This is an athletic defensive lineman, and it's sort of important to kind of keep that in mind. It's probably also important to keep in mind that while I mentioned there the Auburn and what Auburn has done to sort of get in the mix for Trayvon Walker's recruitment, if you follow the message board buzz, Auburn's probably not the foe that Georgia fans have been thinking about and talking about the most. It's probably South Carolina that gets that nod. There's been a little bit of back and forth squabbling between some Georgia fans and some South Carolina fans over Walker here for a while, but if you keep your ear to the ground down, it almost seems like there's some South Carolina fans online are about to sort of wave the white flag here and sort of give the nod to UGA, which sort of brings me to the bottom line of the entire discussion. At times, I'm sort of loath to make predictions because my predictions have a way sometimes of sort of turning out to be wrong, both in terms of on-field results and sort of off-field recruiting battles. But if you really listen to the chatter as of late, it seems like there's reason for Georgia fans to feel good about the decision that five-star defensive tackle Trayvon Walker is going to make on Tuesday. One way or another, whether he chooses Georgia or happens to choose some other school, SEC or not, this is one worth following. This is as big as it gets for Georgia's 2019 class. When you look at the commitments that Georgia already has in place, to think about the possibility of adding Trayvon Walker would give Georgia a heck of a lot of momentum for the 2019 class at a time when that really starts to matter as the steam starts to build for what could be another top class for UGA. My name is Brandon Adams. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented by Marco's Pizza. Thanks for being with us. You watch us live on video, 10 a.m., Dog Nation Facebook page, Dog Nation YouTube page, Dog Nation Twitter feed. Know we had a late start today on video, a little bit of a technical issue. Hopefully that's all taken care of, and you notice nothing here but some fun UGA content as we roll on. Chip Towers here coming up in just a moment. Of course, you can also hear us on the radio at noon on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Rep in podcast form. On demand, anywhere in the world, any time of the day or night. The Apple Podcast Player, the Google Podcast Player for the Android devices, the SoundCloud, the worldfamousdognation.com. It's just really, really glad to have you here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza. And speaking of Marco's Pizza, you know, I heard again from some folks on Twitter this weekend that they have grown to love Marco's Pizza and their connection here to our program. And we love Marco's Pizza, too. First of all, because we just love authentic Italian quality pizza. We also love great prices. How about two medium, two-topping pizzas for just $6.99 each? That's what I call saying hello, primo. And you can do that at the Marco's close to you by going to marcos.com. It's every store, every day, the Italian way. Check it out online there at marcos.com. Take advantage of that great offer. Two medium, two-topping pizzas for just $6.99 each. All right, I want to talk about something here for you a couple minutes on our program that could not be less important, but it's still sort of fascinating to me. Scott Sinclair, and this has sort of become a bit of a tradition here as of late. You know, a lot of these sort of get-together cookouts, players fellowshipping with coaches at houses. And University of Georgia strength and conditioning coach Scott Sinclair becomes the latest SEC coach to kind of put a photo out there of some players coming over to his house and enjoying a little food and a fellowship. And I want to show you, for those of you watching on video, I want to show you this picture on the screen. And if you're listening, I'll do my best to try to describe this. But here's the picture from Scott Sinclair's house, and he writes on Twitter, 128 burgers, 30 hot dogs, ice cream, and great fellowship with the guys. There's that word again. Hashtag football UGA, or I should say he tags football UGA and then says hashtag attack the day. Now, you see an entire collection of football players here, including on the right side of your screen, Jake Fromm. You can't really see the non-throwing hand, I guess, so you can't really tell what that looks like from Fromm in the picture, but it's really the left side of the screen I want to show you. In fact, I think that we can even zoom in on Elijah Holyfield here, seated at the couch. Look at those arms. I mean, he looks like the WWE champion in this photograph. Now, I know that there has been some photos already from Elijah over the course of the offseason that gotten some attention. Some of those may have been photoshopped. In this case, this looks like photoshopping, but I don't believe it is. Is that really what Elijah Holyfield's arms look like? I mean, that's an amazing, amazing, impressive level of work that's been done in the weight room. He's got the sleeveless camouflage shirt on. I guess he does. I mean, if you've got arms like that, I think it should be essentially illegal. Should be a violation of team policy for him to ever wear sleeves if he's got that kind of gun show work going on. So apparently Elijah Holyfield has really been taking care of business in the weight room. And I know for a lot of Georgia fans, that at least sort of builds to some excitement about what he might look like in summer practice when it gets ready to start here. And really just a few days away from Georgia practice getting going here. And those arms, a big reason why Georgia fans are excited about what Elijah Holyfield is going to bring to the table. And among Holyfield's admirers, I guess you can count Georgia coach Kirby Smart. Here is what he said about the way that Holyfield's been working when he spoke about the Georgia running back during spring practice. Here's Kirby Smart.
He's a workhorse. He's a tough guy. He's physical. He's extremely competitive. You know, I thought he grew up his second year because he contributed on special teams. His first year, I don't think he knew how to contribute on special teams. But he's developed as a special teams player. He gained confidence through the special teams, and now that's carried over into his offense and carrying the ball. Like you said, he got some carries last year and some mop-up duty. But he's a physical, tough guy, one of my favorite competitors out there. he's got a pass pro better. He's got to work on it, and that's been a big emphasis for him. But I'm excited to see where he goes. He's had some really good, tough runs this spring.
Yeah, really good stuff there from Kirby Smart describing Elijah Holyfield and the toughness that he's shown on the field. Holyfield himself has talked about, you know, how much he loves being a tough running back, likes being known that way. And it's sort of easy to understand why Elijah Holyfield would embrace toughness when you're bringing that kind of what just appears to be strength to the table. Why wouldn't you want to lower your shoulder and try to create contact? It's usually going to be to your advantage. So for those of you who are listening to the show, you didn't get to see the picture. Maybe we can put a link to it. We post the show at theworldfamousdognation.com. But a pretty impressive a workout regimen apparently in place for Elijah Holyfield, at least based on that photo you saw right there. All right, it's great to have you with us here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza. We got a lot more fun stuff coming up in today's program, including Chip Towers right now.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
Always fun to have Chip Towers here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza on a Monday. Of course, a little bit of a late start for us on video today. Chip, thanks for your patience and waiting through that. It's great to have you on the program. Chip, we were talking about Georgia running back Elijah Holyfield before you joined us, and I don't know if you had a chance to see the picture that we showed on the screen of him at Scott Sinclair's house. Big, bulging biceps, pretty impressive workout regimen apparently in place for him over the course of the offseason. And it really leads me, Chip, to want to ask you about, you know, that possibility of an expanded role for Holyfield here this season and kind of how he compares to the two incoming freshmen that get so much attention, like James Cook and Zamir White, Brian Harry, who's very good in his own right. DeAndre Swift, who we assume is going to be the guy that gets the majority of the carries as the starter this season. This pecking order of five running backs here and how they emerge in comparison with each other this summer here, that's going to be a really fun thing about these series of camp practices about to begin, right?
Oh, gosh, yeah. Look, here's what the reality is on Elijah Holyfield. I mean, as we enter fall camp, and we're just, a week or so away here, I mean, he's your number two tailback, without question. And if you look at Georgia's, history period, but just going back to just last season, your number two ball carrier, which would have been Sony Michel, carried the ball 156 times. That's where he is right now. And certainly, I think Zamir White and James Cook and then certainly Harry and, all these guys are competing for those repetitions. But, I think it was pretty clear that we left spring practice and that was Elijah Holyfield's spot. And I'm guaranteeing now what I know about Elijah and talking to him briefly down there at Camp Sunshine was the last opportunity I had to talk to him. I mean, he intends to stay there. And like you said, I think you've got a great marriage in those two backs right there, DeAndre Swift and Elijah, in that they do a little bit different things. One of the big question marks I have going into the season is what DeAndre Swift looks like as a primary back. That's going to be his role, and he hasn't had that role before. As much as we saw of him and as great as he looked last season, it wasn't as a primary role, and that's a whole different animal altogether. But with regard to Elijah Holyfield, what we do know about him is he can definitely run between the tackles, and at the very least, I think him and DeAndre make a good set in that regard. And then, the competition for snaps, we'll get that all worked out during preseason camp and then to a more sophisticated degree once the game starts.
Yeah, as an avid reader of your work and Mike Griffith's as well, I can tell you that when I look forward to reading y'all's practice reports, that's the thing I think that's going to be about as interesting as anything about, you know, what clues can be garnered. And a lot of this, Chip, as you know, is also going to be the Austin Peay game because, for the most part, Georgia ought to have the freedom to play who it wants and whatever capacity it wants heading into that South Carolina game, which you and I will talk about here in a few minutes. But this is going to be one of the real fun storylines for me to kind of find out what matters more, the unbridled athleticism of Cook and Zamir White, and they both probably bring it to the table, assuming Zamir is healthy, or the experience of Harrion and Holyfield. That's going to be a really cool thing to watch play out.
Yeah, it is, and I think you're right. I mean, the rotation that we see in the Austin Peay game is going to be determined in the, 4 weeks roughly of preseason camp. And for those backs just coming in, the majority of that is going to be how much they can master of the playbook. And that's where, I think Brian Harrion and Holyfield, and certainly Zamir White to some degree, you know, have a huge head start on those other guys. Just the, you know, just familiarity with the playbook. And this is an area that Holyfield has come a long way in. You know, even going back to the spring game, I think you say he didn't have a great game catching ball, but Georgia was trying to get the ball out there to him, because, you know, you see this guy, what he looks like physically. If you can get him in one-on-one matchups with some defensive backs, I know who I'm putting my money on. I'm really excited about Elijah Holyfield, and I know he is. I know him and his family are, you know. I mean, everybody knows his dad, the real deal, Evander Holyfield, and, you know, he's been very patient, you know, with Georgia. He could have gone anywhere. And he liked the idea of his son playing for the Bulldogs, but he wants to see him get on the field, and Elijah wants to get on the field. And, you know, it's for this family, it's like, you know, and not really clouds have parted, but, you know, certainly a door is cracked open for a little bit. And we've seen in glimpses, there's a lot to Elijah Holyfield, and he's eager to get the Bulldog Nation and the SEC to see what he's got. When he's on the field, you know, a lot. And I think he will be this season.
All right, let me be very candid about our next topic. I obviously do this show from the perspective of a fan. And as a fan, I had started to make peace with the notion of, well, maybe D'Angelo Gibbs won't be playing in 2018. I think that Gibbs is a sensational talent coming out of high school. He was one of the most, I thought, coveted members of Georgia's 2017 class. And, you know, based on what Kirby said back in Columbus early in the summer, I was sort of thinking, maybe this is sort of setting the stage for Gibbs to kind of not really be a part of this situation this fall. And then SEC Media Days happens last week, Chip, as you're aware of. Now, Natress Patrick, for whatever it's worth, I've sort of always felt sort of okay about him coming back. But the Gibbs thing now, to me, has seemingly taken another twist and turn here. Now, Kirby Smart didn't necessarily give up a whole lot on this. The players seem to strike a hopeful tone, including a JRE, D'Angelo Gibbs' cousin. It feels like they would be instructed to say otherwise if things were not looking very good for D'Angelo Gibbs. Maybe I'm also reading too much into that. What did you make of the way that Gibbs and Natress Patrick became a bit of a talking point on Georgia's turn at SEC Media Days on Tuesday?
Well, you know, here's what it is. You know, I think you have, you know, sort of a referendum, and you have reality. And, you know, with Kirby Smart, you're going to hear the referendum. And with players, you're going to hear what they see. And, you know, there's a lot of indications that D'Angelo Gibbs is making his way back onto the field in some way, shape, or form. He's not at the end of, you know, I would look at this as a 400-meter race, you know, one time around a track. And, he's not there yet, but I think he's in that last turn, you know, headed for that last 100-yard stretch to the end, and he's got to get there. You know, he's got to continue to do the things that he's being asked to do to be a member of the team in good standing. But you know, every indication I get, he's at every workout. He's doing everything with the team. I mean, if you even look at the outlook for 2018 and the Georgia media guide that Claude Felton and his staff put out, you know, he's clearly listed in there as you know, one of the players that's going to be competing for playing time in the secondary. And I agree with you, Brandon. I mean, I do think this guy is a terrific athletic talent. I base that on having seen him play a lot in Grayson. You know, at Grayson High School, you remember he was just as good of a wide receiver and kick returner as he was as a defensive back. This is a guy that rated highly both as a cornerback and as a safety, you know, and as an athlete, so in all three regards. So, you know, and I saw how quickly he ended up on the field that first spring as an early enrollee. So clearly the kid's got some talent. He's just got to get everything moving in the right direction. And I think the comments of the players are a little bit more perception-oriented, and they're just seeing him out there working with Scott Sinclair, doing all the off-season training and conditioning, and I think they expect to see him out there on the field with him and be surprised if he would.
So, you know, Kirby Smart's talked a lot over the offseason about the need for leaders to emerge. Obviously, Georgia lost a terrific crop of leaders, probably all-time greats in that category from the 2017 team. You got to replace these guys for 2018. I don't know if Jonathan Ledbetter is that guy, because I'm obviously not behind closed doors, but he could certainly play that role in a movie, could he not? He looks the part. He sounds the part. I mean, he's clearly got the fake-it-till-you-make-it part down right, if he's not truly the leader yet, because at SEC Media Days last week, you know, he certainly he gives off that leadership vibe, does he not?
He really does. And let me tell you, he made quite an impression on the SEC. You know, obviously, you know, Brandon, it seems to come up from time to time, but I've been doing this for a long time, going to media days.
Sure.
You know, one of the most enjoyable things about it for me is just, you know, seeing old faces, those guys that have been covering, you know, Auburn and my buddies at LSU. And I've just had the good fortune to get to know all these guys and a bunch of them, you know, at the end of the day when the sessions are over and you're talking about what happened. I commented on Ledbetter. I really like that Ledbetter kid, you know, and he seemed like the real deal, seemed like a genuine guy. And the thing I'm having to remind him of, because the story, you know, when you bring those kids to SEC Media Days, their stories sort of circulate around the rest of the league, stories that those of us who follow a team closely, fans and reporters, we know all these stories, but they float around, and they just love this story. He has a great story. Everybody loves a reclamation project. Everybody loves a comeback story, and that is what you have in Jonathan Ledbetter. And here's the thing that I think is almost getting forgotten about him. He is an exceptional football player. Mm-hmm. He is a all-SEC caliber defensive end. There were times last year that he was unblockable.
Yeah.
And I mean that sincerely. And I think as a senior, that we're even going to see more of that. He's really excited. Georgia's going to be doing a lot of different stuff with him. They're going to pop him out there to outside linebacker a little bit. They're going to sneak him in there and into the, you know, two and three technique now and then, and see if they can't get some uncanny speed and that swim move that he has.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I expect big things from Ledbetter. That's football side of it. The other side of it, Georgia is in desperate look for leaders, okay? Because that was the quotient that put Georgia in another stratosphere last year. I mean, they had essentially the same team they had the year before. Kirby talks about this all the time. Well, you know, you lost 37 lettermen, you know, off of last year's team, and it was just a special group. How important was that to what Georgia winning 13 games? I don't know. A lot of it had to do with Sony Michel and Nick Chubb being special players and Javon Wims being able to catch anything in his area code and you know, that unbelievably special defense, that second line in particular, the linebacker core. You know, all that is part and parcel of it. What we don't know is the intangible of that leadership, and that's what Kirby and them will be working on, you know, really, really hard, in particular in these first couple of weeks of camp. After that opens and it's really hot and really difficult, they'll be looking for leaders, and then you got to get down to brass tacks and figure out who's going to play where and what you're going to do with the football.
Yeah, that's really well said, Chip. I like the piece that you wrote about the South Carolina game. You know, you had a chance to obviously catch up with Will Muschamp at the end of SEC Media Days last week. And, you know, it kind of gets me excited about the game. Now, if you're Kirby Smart and the Georgia coaches, that's a lot of work to get ready for a big opponent like that week two. But, you know, we've lamented a lot, Chip, the absence of a Notre Dame game this year, or the, you know, Alabama gets to play Louisville and usually plays a big, tough week one opponent. You got LSU, Miami. A lot of these high-profile non-conference games, Georgia sort of skips a year on that. So we'll have to settle for on the road against a big-time SEC foe week two. And honestly, you know, for Georgia fans curious about finding out how good their team really is, that's a pretty good measuring stick right there. Georgia's still a pretty big favorite by Vegas standards, but as you've pointed out before, and also kind of point out in the piece that you wrote, Williams-Brice Stadium week two has been tough on Georgia in the past.
Boy, they really, really have. I mean, if you go back and look over the history, which I did, and if your listeners hadn't had a chance to read, I would urge you to go to dognation.com and look that up.
Absolutely.
I don't have it in front of me, but the numbers on that game are astounding on how close it's been, how competitive it's been. Georgia has taken powerhouse teams up there and fought, you know, for their lives and just come out ragtagged and victorious sometimes not. So I see that game always. I have a bunch of family that lives up in Columbia. They just so get up for the game. Being early in the year, as I've said here before, it's so hot. I don't know that it's hotter in Columbia than it is Athens, Georgia, in early September, but it sure does seem like it. And a lot of times we've run into violent thunderstorms over there. You think the 2002 game that Pollock's famous for got delayed by lightning, the game that, you know, the girly game, they call it, where, you know, he didn't get the ball on fourth and short or whatever it was, you know, was delayed by rain. It's because it's always so hot over there. And they haven't had their hopes squashed yet. That's what happens when you meet them later. South Carolina's usually out of the picture in the SEC where they're pick number two this year, and for good reason. And they got Georgia coming home. They're going to be fired up for this game, and Georgia better be also.
Let me squeeze in one quick final question here. You got some quotes from Greg McElroy, the SEC network analyst, on Jake Fromm, and I won't get this quote exactly right. I might have to end up paraphrasing it. But McElroy says something to the effect of, you know, Fromm's kind of quarterback that can beat you with his brain. And I thought that was kind of a really interesting phrase from McElroy to use there, because when I think about the difficulty of game planning for Georgia's two quarterbacks, now Fields is also, I believe, a bit of a student of the game based on what I've heard about him. But in terms of Fromm, who got a year's worth of experience as a freshman in 2017, game planning against him also means thinking about his sort of counter move to the initial defense you show him. And that's a big part of what Fromm brings to the table this season, right?
Yeah, he really does. I always enjoy talking to Greg McElroy. You know, I think this is kind of a little bit off subject, but I really think the SEC network has assembled a really good group of analysts. You know, I mean, these guys know the league like the back of their hand. You know, Marcus Spears and Greg McElroy and, you know, Georgia's own Matt Stinchcomb and Pollock was there. I mean, these guys really know the game well. And so I've managed to catch Greg and an aside in the back of the room, and me and just a handful of other writers, you know, saw him sitting there, and, you know, man, we pounced on him. So the discussion started with, it's the year of the quarterback in the SEC. And, you know, a lot of people are talking about Jarrett Stidham and Drew Locke and Jake Bentley. And Jake Fromm is in that conversation some, but, you know, clearly Greg McElroy doesn't think he's in the conversation enough, and he just raves when he gets on this kid. And the thing about Greg, he's a film junkie. I mean, they sit in there, they have access at the SEC network to everything that the coaches and players have. So they can sit there and watch that stuff until the cows come home. And he just loves what he sees from Jake Fromm. And it's, you know, you get a lot of talk about his arm being a weakness or the fact that he's not in a throwing offense, but the thing that gets forgotten about, you know, he comes up there and he earned this right last year as a freshman with audibles in his pocket. He's given the leeway from Jim Chaney that he can check right to left. He can check out a run and into pass and vice versa. And they run a lot of pass options. So he's making a lot of decisions on the field. And he's just amazed with how well the number of good decisions that he makes. They just put a plus and minus on every play, and he says his pluses are just out of the world. And you know, he can throw the ball, too, if Georgia intends to do that. They're always going to be a run-first-oriented team, but if you just look at his touchdowns-to-interceptions ratio and that third-down QBR, this is a stat that I don't think is talked about enough. What he does on third-down in particular is uncanny, unmatched in the SEC. And for that reason, I think at the end of the day, depending on how Georgia does this year, he may end up being considered the best quarterback in the SEC. But that'll be determined on the football field this fall.
Really good stuff, Chip. Thanks for being here with us on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza. I'm looking forward to reading a whole bunch more from you coming up here at DogNation.com. And, of course, we'll look forward to speaking to you again on our program again very soon as well.
All right. See you, man.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Yeah, really fascinating stuff. And if you haven't read what Chip wrote about Jake Fromm and what Greg McElroy had to say, I think it's really interesting. And I think it does speak to one of the things that makes Fromm really tough against these opposing defenses. And we saw some of that, I think, during the Rose Bowl. You know, and listen, y'all know I'm not X's and O's expert. I'm not a former quarterback. There's plenty that Jake Fromm does on the football field that I couldn't even begin to explain. But you do see, especially when you go back and rewatch some of the TV broadcast stuff, these moments when it's obvious that Fromm sort of checked from one play into another, from pass into run or from left side run to right side run. And it's that ability to sort of understand the field and read the field that I do think makes Jake Fromm a pretty impressive quarterback. There are some guys who will throw the ball farther, and there are some guys who will throw the ball harder. In fact, some of Fromm's Georgia teammates, both past and present, you may be able to say that about. But in terms of really seeing what's going on the field and making a good decision, Fromm is really tough in that regard. It's one of the reasons why I think Georgia fans are excited about he and Justin Fields. Now, Fields may truly emerge as I mentioned a moment ago, his own sort of version of the student of the game. He seems pretty attuned to that world himself. But as a first-year player, the odds are he's probably a little farther behind on that than what Fromm is going into his second season, which is why both Fromm and Fields in their own regard are pretty dynamic weapons here. All right, let's shift gears here. Let's do our SEC through. Let's take a look at what's happening around the SEC, and I want to go back to where we finished things off on Friday. The SEC media in place for SEC Media Days does cast their votes for all-conference predicted order of finish here. I want to do the conference stuff in a moment in terms of the players. Let me start with how the media sees the East and the West showing up here. In fact, we have a handy little graphic we can use to kind of give you an idea of this. Let me start with the East here. Georgia gets 271 first-place votes. South Carolina does get 8 there. Florida gets 4 first-place votes. And then you get Missouri, Kentucky, Tennessee, and Vanderbilt. Kentucky and Tennessee both got a first-place vote. That's obviously a little bit comical. But nonetheless, Georgia, the overwhelming pick here in the SEC East, probably as big a favorite, I'm guessing, as Georgia's ever been. I don't quite have the all the information on that, but I can't imagine there have been too many moments in time where Georgia's been a bigger favorite, more prohibitive favorite in the SEC East than it is right now. You also see how Georgia's status as a favorite in the East compares to what's happening out West. Obviously, the big difference between the East and the West right now is the thought of what's below the favorite, Alabama in the West compared to Georgia in the East. Auburn's a team that could be, you know, likely be a preseason top 10 team. This team that beat both Georgia and Alabama a year ago. So Auburn is that sort of, you know, national power, sort of that second version of that in the SEC West. The way the SEC East does not have that. South Carolina is probably a top 25 team. South Carolina, though, probably compares a little bit more favorably to the SEC West predicted third team, Mississippi State, which will show up in most of the preseason top 25s. Auburn is just sort of that second top 10 team. So the West, from that standpoint, a little different than the SEC East, but both Georgia and Alabama, overwhelming favorites. And for what it's worth, when it comes to predicting the conference, the media gives the nod to Alabama there, well over Georgia. This may or may not end up being a good thing. You know, Alabama, it's kind of funny. They have won the league in years when they weren't predicted to win and sometimes failed to win in years where they were. It just goes to show you that the SEC media has sort of a history, like all media and like all of us who are fans of the sport, of sort of getting a lot of these predictions wrong. And I'm sure that, you know, 2018 stands to be another time in which we look back on what we said during the summer and we scratch our heads and wondering, how could have anybody ever thought that? But that's just kind of what goes on there with that. The media also does its preseason all-SEC teams. And I guess, you know, there's some thought here, and I know that Mike Griffith wrote about this a little bit at DogNation.com, that maybe Georgia snubbed off the all-SEC first-team list. No Georgia player on that first-team list. You do have Georgia players on both the second- and third-team offense. Fromm's a third-team quarterback. All-SEC, Andrew Thomas shows up there. DeAndre Swift was a second-team All-SEC running back. Really, that for me is good enough. You know, in years past, if you want to go back before the start of last season, when you really saw a shortage of Georgia players on the All-SEC list, you can't win the SEC without All-SEC players. So you've got to have guys who show up on these preseason lists. They don't necessarily have to be first-team All-SEC selections, though. You just sort of have to be in the conversation for All-SEC players, and Georgia actually does pretty well in that regard. Two Georgia players make the first-team All-SEC defense. J.R. Reed there on that, along with DeAndre Baker. No surprise there. They have been really well represented in a lot of these lists here. You do have Rodrigo Blankenship that shows up as an all-SEC kicker, potentially. So you've got a lot of Georgia representation here. Nothing on the all-SEC first-team offense. But this is clearly a Georgia team in keeping with kind of what we said all offseason long, that is a really talented team. The absence of leadership is an issue. We mentioned that with Chip Towers when he joined us a moment ago. But in terms of sort of the raw talent, the guys who are able to step up into expanded roles and do big things this upcoming season, I believe that the preseason all-SEC vote, even if it's a shortage of first-team guys, I believe that it demonstrates a team that's very much in the thick of a competition and discussion when it comes to the SEC this season. I feel very good, in other words, about where Georgia is as we head towards the start of practice, which really should be just a few days away. With that in mind, we'll say that is your SEC through. All right. In keeping with the discussion of all SEC players, potential snubs on offense and guys getting recognized on defense, you know, some offensive players for Georgia showing up on that second and third team list, let's make the subject here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza, of our Dog Day Q&A. You know, during the offseason, we've been using this portion of our regular broadcast to just be a little bit more interactive, give you a chance to weigh in. And I kind of want to do a two-part question today, if you don't mind. You may have seen the all SEC list. Now you can go to DogNation.com and see the entire thing. I'd love to find out from you. in terms of your, whether it be offensive side of the ball, defensive side of the ball, who would you say is pretty close to a lock from Georgia for being an all-SEC player here in 2018? And this may be the most more interesting, fascinating part of the discussion. Is there a dark horse candidate from you that you think from Georgia could end up being all-SEC by the end of the season? I'd love to have you weigh in on that as part of our Dog Day Q&A. We'll do some of this on Facebook and on YouTube here today. While I'm pulling up some of the comments, I'll give you some of my own thoughts on this. First of all, in terms of a dark horse, you know, a name that you're not going to see as much of, you know, if you look at the offensive lineman who got mentioned in this when the media voted at SEC Media Days last week, you see Lamont Gilyard, you see Andrew Thomas. I think that Ben Cleveland is worthy of being mentioned in this discussion. And maybe one of the new coming starters like, you know, Isaiah Wilson if he starts at right tackle, or, you know, Jamari Salyer if he were to emerge at a left guard. You know, maybe they end up being discussed in this in some form or fashion. Obviously, new coming players are eligible here too. But Cleveland, who really showed out a bit at the end of last season, especially I thought in the SEC championship game, I think it would be interesting to see if Ben Cleveland's one of these guys that, you know, lives up to it and gets a chance to really show off and maybe make some all-SEC lists by the end of the season. He may be one of my dark horse names here. I'd love to have you weigh in on yours. Christopher Smith on Facebook says DeAndre Baker is his lock to make the all-SEC team. And yeah, you know, when it comes to the Georgia list here, I don't know that anyone is more of a lock seemingly than what DeAndre Baker is. And, you know, he has been sort of praised by the sort of rank-and-file fan, Pro Football Focus, which is more of a sort of an analytics film room-based, you know, measurement and evaluation. You know, they put some stats out recently about just how effective he was at limiting pass receptions on his side of the field a year ago. So when you think about those locks from Georgia to be an all-SEC player, DeAndre Baker may be the most likely name of anybody on there. Good answer on that, Christopher Smith. Matt Rukavina says, I'd love to see Ben Cleveland get that nod there for the all-SEC team. Yeah, I know for a fact he's one of the more popular guys, and I think a lot of Georgia fans would feel that way as well. Sean Begood on Facebook, or I should say Bedgood, pardon me, Sean, mentions Tyler Clark. Yeah, you know, Tyler Clark is one of those names that if you ask me back in, you know, like mid to late October to sort of look ahead to the upcoming year, I don't know that Clark would have necessarily been the name that I would have said there in that regard. But in terms of how he plays in the Rose Bowl, I mean, that was, you know, on the biggest stage imaginable. He has about the biggest coming out party anybody could ever have in terms of really gaining attention. I don't know yet that the SEC media or even the national media has noticed that yet, but I believe a lot of Georgia fans are looking at him as one of those highly productive defensive linemen. Not just one of those guys that has good film, but also produces stats as well, gets after the quarterback. He certainly spent plenty of time in the backfield against Baker Mayfield in Oklahoma in the Rose Bowl. So, Sean, I think that's a great answer to include on this list. I like Jordan Perry here. This is a great answer. How about Richard LeCount as a dark horse? All-SEC safety nod for Richard LeCount. First of all, that's a great example of what a dark horse would be, just given the fact that, you know, once again, the SEC media, by and large, is not paying attention to Richard LeCount. But Georgia fans obviously know what he brings to the table. They know him as the top leader for Georgia's 2017 class, and they know him as a guy that has shown some flashes of having the athleticism to also go along with that there. I think that's a really good name. I see no reason as a sophomore why big things shouldn't be expected of Richard LeCount. And if you're looking for a definition of what dark horse potential all-SEC would be, Richard LeCount seems to be a pretty good example to be that guy. All right, we will get ready to wrap up our regular broadcast here. We'll take more comments. And by the way, if you're listening to our show either on the radio or in podcast form, you want to weigh in on our Dog Day Q&A as well, you can certainly do that by reaching out to me on Twitter at Dog Nation Daily. I will also tell you, as we close out our show the way we do each and every day, we like to do our Gatorator countdown. We just believe the good Georgia fans are Gator haters, and those lousy, stinking Dick Gators, we think, are going down again 96 days from right now. It's our Gatorator countdown. We do it every single day here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza. So tomorrow is the big day. Trayvon Walker, the five-star defensive lineman, as we discussed off the top of the show, will make his big-time announcement on Tuesday night. Dog Nation's going to be all over that. It starts tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. And the great news is, for those of you that watch the show on video, we'll start on time tomorrow. We'll have no technical issues. We'll have Jeff Sintel on the program as part of our Marlowe's Tavern tell-all, and we will get into the subject. Hope you'll join us then. It's Dog Nation Daily. Have a great day, everybody.